Our farmers will be very happy, our manufacturers will be very happy, and our government is very happy because we're taking in tens of billions of dollars.
Trade tariffs and talks escalate. It's Wednesday, May 15th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, some traditions fade among Rohingya women. U.S. political standoffs grow. The business of flights and loans. Space debris. And a story of segregation. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says U.S. tariffs on China bring billions of dollars into U.S. coffers, and he says China's retaliatory tariffs can have no effect on the U.S. economy. The escalation of the U.S.-China trade war sent stock markets tumbling on Monday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average falling more than 600 points, rebounding well on Tuesday. Earlier, China had announced new tariffs of up to 25% on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods beginning June 1st. The United States imposed tariffs of 25% on $200 billion of Chinese imports. We have more from VOA's Slotika Hoke.
China has raised tariffs on more than 5,000 U.S. products, including meat, many types of vegetables, fruit juice, cooking oil, tea, and coffee. U.S. farmers are concerned. President Trump on Monday promised they will be compensated from the tariffs imposed on Chinese goods in the United States.
We're going to take the highest year, the biggest purchase that China has ever made with our farmers, which is about $15 billion, and do something reciprocal to our farmers so our farmers can do well. They'll be planting, they'll be able to sell for less, and they'll make the same kind of money until such time as it's all straightened out. So our farmers will be very happy, our manufacturers will be very happy, and our government is very happy because we're taking in tens of billions of dollars.
Trump said China has a lot more to lose in tax and tariff wars with the United States because it exports more. A Chinese analyst says the tariffs will hurt the United States more in the long run.
In the short term, China and the United States will share the cost of the tariffs. But after 3 to 6 months, it's the American retailers and local consumers who'll be paying the cost. Based on our calculations, the Chinese company's share of the total cost caused by the tariffs is only 10%, while the U.S. accounts for 90% or even more.
By some U.S. estimates, Trump's tariffs on Chinese goods could make Americans spend about $700 per year more on consumer goods.
The way he does his cost-benefit analysis in terms of tariffs and trade doesn't make economic sense at all, because having a trade deficit with China or having a trade deficit of $400 billion with China does not mean that the U.S. consumers are not benefiting.
Trump said the cost of tariffs can be avoided by producing goods at home or buying them from non-tariff countries. Financial markets reacted negatively to the tariff war, but some investors say they are not worried.
Obviously, the near term and even the medium term can be painful when we try to adjust our economy to a better outcome. And so I think when these things hit the headlines, we definitely see a lot of volatility. And then all the bears come out of the woodwork and start talking about all the things they were talking about in the fourth quarter.
Still, economists agree that a prolonged trade war is not good for anyone and call on the two sides to resolve the impasse as soon as possible. Trump said he will discuss trade with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the upcoming G7 summit. Meanwhile, he said the United States could impose a 25% tariff on an additional $325 billion worth of Chinese goods. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Trump denies trade talks with China have collapsed. Small parties put Thai coup leader on track to remain in prime minister post. Philippine Senate elections expand power of anti-drug pro-China President Duterte. UN mission urges financial isolation of Myanmar's military. North Korea accuses United States of robbery for seizing cargo ship. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found online at Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Some women refugees in Bangladesh might be chipping away at barriers within their community. Ethnic Rohingya society remains very traditional and male-dominated, but as Dave Grunebaum reports, these women have been elected into important roles within their community.
Tahereh Begum is going door-to-door, listening to the problems of her fellow refugees.
We bought clothes with us from Myanmar, but they were torn by the rats.
The issues range from clothes to sanitary pads to more lighting near the toilets at night. Some of these issues might seem relatively minor, but these refugees barely have enough to get by. And in these camps, it is not always so easy to take care of simple things. Since August 2017, more than 700,000 Rohingya Muslims have fled Myanmar for neighboring Bangladesh because of a military crackdown that UN investigators say had genocidal intent, accusations Myanmar denies. The refugees now live in overcrowded camps. Toilets shared by many families can get filthy. Sometimes clean water is scarce in sections of the camps. Tahereh Begum was elected by her fellow refugees to a camp committee that advocates for them in meetings with the UN Refugee Agency. These committees do not have the authority to pass rules for the camps. Those decisions are made by the Bangladesh government. But the concern raised in these meetings are relayed to the government as well as non-government organizations working in the camps. So far, only four of the 34 refugee camps have committees, but the UN Refugee Agency says it hopes to phase them in across the rest within the next 12 months. Each camp committee is structured to have an even number of men and women.
I wanted to become a committee member because females are needed on it, because there are some issues that women have that they would not be comfortable talking about to a man.
There are many things that females would not say directly to a man. That is why it is good to have women who can help us.
The Rohingya Muslim community is conservative and male-dominated. It remains unclear how much of a difference having women on these committees will make towards peeling away these patriarchal patterns. Committee member Aisha Khatun is 21 years old. She sees herself not only as someone who can help her fellow refugees, but also a potential role model for young women and girls in the camps.
I can help my fellow refugees and impact how others see ways that they can help too.
Workers for several non-government organizations told VOA there are refugees resisting any change to their society's patriarchal patterns. Old traditions and gender barriers can be hard to break, but perhaps this is one step. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
Happening now regarding Asia, U.S. lawmakers are expressing hope for a swift but comprehensive resolution of America's deepening trade disputes with China. Unease prevailed on Capitol Hill after China retaliated against a new round of American tariffs by hiking duties on U.S.-made goods, as both political parties say China must be confronted. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us as we have another day of VOA Asia. Much has been happening where members of the U.S. Democrat Party have been faced with blanket opposition to their oversight probes by Republicans. Congressional Democrats are considering more contempt citations against administration officials who are defying their subpoenas. U.S. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler said lawmakers may bundle numerous contempt citations from different committees into a single resolution that the full House of Representatives could then vote on. Nadler said Congress faces the unprecedented situation in which the administration is essentially stonewalling all subpoenas, something that has never happened in American history as far as he knows. We thought we'd provide an update for you of the situation, so our Ira Melman sat down with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone to talk about it.
There are a couple of factors at play here. In some ways, this is a typical extension of the kind of controversies we have seen since Donald Trump became president of the United States. He often makes it about his own political viability. Those who work for him know they have to show extreme loyalty or pay the consequences. But we are moving into a different phase. And the different phase is, and it's departing from history a bit, is that in general, administrations in the past have been at least somewhat responsive to the oversight requirements submitted by the U.S. Congress. Part of our constitutional government is that no one branch is superior to the other, and that any disputes between, say, the president and Congress will be settled by the third branch, judicial branch, headed by the Supreme Court. We are seeing the president, though, push in a harder direction now, sort of a more blanket approach to refusing Democratic oversight, especially from the House of Representatives, where Democrats have the majority. Where this goes, does it wind up in the courts? Some of it may.
President Trump says it's all political, that the whole thing, the whole Mueller report on what he might or might not have been guilty of has been a hoax. How serious is this?
Of course, everything is political in a sense, but just because there are political aspects to thing, does that mean that you can throw out 200 years or more of precedent in terms of how one branch of government responds to the other? And I think they will find some difficulties here in the courts eventually in terms of whether they can just blanket refuse on the grounds of politics. One thing, though, that may be working in President Trump's favor politically is that this all takes a long time. Some of these court things will play out for months, perhaps even longer.
Maybe even through the election
yes,
or into
that's
the
right.
election.
And so we had a similar case a few years ago under President Obama. The attorney general was held in contempt by the Republican-controlled House, but that just sort of fizzled out at the end once Obama left office.
What's the possibility of impeachment?
You know, each week it seems to shift a little bit. There's no doubt there's some Democrats who want to proceed now. But for the most part, the Democratic leadership, led by people like Nancy Pelosi in the House, Chuck Schumer in the Senate, has kind of held the line on that. I think they see a political risk to impeachment. If you look at the polls, support for impeachment has actually dropped in the last few months. And right now, it's a minority of people that favor impeachment. I think the Democratic leaders are looking at that. They don't want to make a mistake here. They don't want a political distraction that could take away from their efforts to run against President Trump in the 2020 election, no matter the fact that they have more than 20 candidates running right now.
Is there a chance Donald Trump can win re-election?
Yes, there is. His poll ratings are not great. They haven't been great through his whole presidency. But we're now post-Mueller report, post-Russia investigation, even though the debate continues. The economy remains strong. The question is, can Trump hold that group together that he won with in 2016? The risk for Donald Trump is he won a very narrow victory based on electoral college wins in a handful of states that handed him the presidency. But by very few votes in those specific states, Democrats are already targeting those states. They're states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Those will be the prime battlegrounds in 2020. And Democrats, based on how they did in the midterm elections of 2018, already feel confident they can cut into some of his support in those states. It's shaping up as another very close presidential election. But the president can win. And as we've seen since World War II, most incumbent presidents do win a second term in the end.
VOA national reporter Jim Malone, always great talking to you, Jim.
Same here.
Coming up, Beijing's airspace is about to become more crowded. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This News from VOA Asia. North Korea has accused the United States of robbery and demanded the immediate return of a cargo ship seized for allegedly violating international sanctions. The official Korean Central News Agency says the seizure violates the 2018 agreement between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. You'll find more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, air traffic takes off in China, while Pakistan has secured new loans. These are the stories on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Chinese airlines conducted test flights at a new mega airport in Beijing this week. Daxing International Airport is located less than 50 kilometers outside China's capital, and once completed, will become one of the world's largest airports. This week's test flights mark an important milestone for the airport. Chu Wenxin is the deputy general manager of Beijing Daxing International Airport.
The test flights are a prerequisite for project acceptance and ground operation procedures.
Rising prosperity in China has resulted in increasing demand for travel and mobility, and with it, a need to relieve pressure on Beijing's existing airport. Once operational, Daxing Airport is expected to transport 72 million passengers annually and 20 million tons of cargo and mail. Further trials at the airport are scheduled for August and September, with the opening planned for September 2019. Pakistan and the IMF have reached a new agreement securing a $6 billion bailout for the cash-strapped country. Finance advisor Abdul Hafiz Sheikh says the country has also secured an additional $2 to $3 billion from the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has been a longtime critic of the IMF and has made efforts to find funding from other sources throughout the Middle East and China. While he has had some success in these efforts, also securing $6 billion in funding from Saudi Arabia in October, that money was not enough to address Pakistan's looming balance of payment crisis. Pakistan's economy has been suffering from low growth, soaring inflation, and mounting debt. High fuel prices and low tax yields have also contributed to the country's current economic woes. Since it joined the IMF in 1950, Pakistan has had 21 bailouts. The latest IMF funding package will be administered over the next 3 years. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, Thai Prime Minister and 2014 coup leader Prayuth Chan-o-cha took a giant leap closer to holding on to his post after 11 small parties endorsed his candidacy, although a scramble for control of the lower house of parliament continues. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, small objects floating in space appear to be surprisingly rare in one part of our solar system, as we hear VOA's Rick Pantaleo take a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study in the journal Science suggests there may be very few small Kuiper Belt objects. The Kuiper Belt is an almost 3 billion kilometer wide ring of rocks left over from the creation of the solar system. A Southwest Research Institute-led team of scientists studied photos and data captured during the 2015 flyby of Pluto and its largest moon, Charon, by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft. Their analysis revealed that a lack of craters measuring between 91 meters to 1.6 kilometers on Charon must also indicate that any impacting objects smaller than that may also be rare. The study's lead author, Kelsey Singer of the SWRI, said that a lack of small Kuiper Belt objects indicates the formation and/or evolution of the Kuiper Belt were somewhat different than the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The virtual reality documentary Traveling While Black by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Roger Ross Williams immerses the viewer in what travel was like for black Americans during the Jim Crow era of the 1950s and 60s, when racial segregation was widespread across much of the United States. Black motorists and travelers could consult the Green Book, a guide to lodging, restaurants, and bathrooms around the country that catered to African Americans. The film focuses on one of the locations, Ben's Chili Bowl. It's a landmark D.C. diner that provided sanctuary for the African American traveler. The film was part of D.C.'s film festival. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke with patrons at Ben's Chili Bowl and the producers of the VR documentary.
The Green Book was a guide for African Americans to travel safely, to find shelter, food, and gas in a time when these basic rights were not guaranteed.
In the documentary Traveling While Black, African American patrons at Ben's Chili Bowl reflect on their experiences traveling during the Jim Crow era. One of them is Sandra Butler Truesdale, a native Washingtonian. She relates how blacks had to sit in the back of public buses or the last car of the train and use separate bathrooms, which were rarely available.
The most, I think, difficult thing was the fact that you could not relieve yourself on the train or the bus.
Butler Truesdale remembers coming to Ben's Chili Bowl since she was a girl.
It was a sanctuary. You could meet and talk about politics and talk about legislation and talk about the things that would help as a race.
Traveling While Black executive producer Bonnie Nelson Schwartz says she produced the documentary after staging a theater play on the same topic in Washington 10 years ago. It was called The Green Book. She says audiences reacted viscerally.
And after the play, they began standing up one by one, telling stories about when they traveled in the South during segregation and their families used the Green Book, about not being able to stop anywhere, about being threatened, never having a meal on the trip, always having to pack a picnic lunch and eat by the roadside.
10 years later, her documentary Traveling While Black is receiving international acclaim, which doesn't surprise her.
I think probably immigration is part of that. It's always people who are not of the community moving in. There is a backlash, obviously, in many cities in Europe to immigration. And so there is friction and there is conflict. And what this film hopes to do is begin a conversation.
Sandra Butler Truesdale says the documentary also sparks conversation on race relations in America's streets today.
It's the same thing now with our young black males. We teach them early on how to behave in case they are arrested or in case they are stopped. For the most part, they are trained early on how they should behave.
The virtual reality film immerses the viewer into the intimate discussions black families are having about race while dining at Ben's Chili Bowl, says producer Stéphane Etoui.
You forget about the technology. You forget about having a headset on. And you really feel connecting to the place where you are, this new reality.
Traveling While Black deals with the same era as the Academy Award-winning picture Green Book, which was criticized as whitewashing the black traveling experience during the Jim Crow era. Bonnie Nelson Schwartz has a different take.
The Hollywood film is a personal story. I understand there's a lot of anger, that it is not a fair portrait, but it's one man's portrait based on his book. This experience with this film will begin conversations in museums and in communities all over the country.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington 1.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You can download our program from iTunes and SoundCloud. And you can hear us on the radio if you happen to be out and about throughout Asia. Many radio stations carry our program, like U Radio of Hetai University, FM 101.25 at Hetai University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And, of course, we like to send our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Cedric Franklin, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.